Welcome to the Danger Room, a place to prepare for the opponents you are yet to face. We discuss strategy and how to level up your game in Marvel Crisis Protocol. We will have our Xavier Protocol segment, some hot takes discussing something new and shiny, and our main topic of the week. We would like to begin by thanking you, the listener, for giving us your time to listen to our opinions of the game. On the podcast, we have Jacob, Sploosh, and myself, Dizzard. All right, so we're going to begin with our hot takes on Toad. He's a pretty interesting character, I believe so. So, Jacob, what do you think on Toad?
So we talked about him a little bit last week in the Totally Awesome, playing him with portals and trying to score a turn one herb. It's a really fun plan. I've been trying it out this past week, and despite not being disrupted by my opponent, I still haven't managed to get that round one herb score. Both times I had terrain in the deployment zone that meant that I couldn't deploy Toad exactly where I wanted to put him, because there's a really narrow band where he has to go in order to be in the right position to get the herb off Valkyrie and then move to the vessel. And if there's a piece of terrain there, which means that he can't position exactly where he needs to, he can't make it to the vessel, or Valkyrie can't make it to him. One of those things is going to be true, unless he's in exactly the right spot. So just one thing, just picking up on our conversation from last week, one thing to be aware of if you're seeing this across from you, especially if you are going, if you don't have priority, if you're going second, you can choose the terrain and rotate the map round so that your opponent can't put Toad where they want. So just be aware of that as an extra piece of counterplay.
Sweet. So yeah, for me, I think Toad is probably my new favorite two threat character. And he's at least up there, probably between him and Okoye for my top slot. But I think Toad's very interesting as far as your extracts go, and he's going to change a lot of, he's going to create a lot of janky plays. We've already seen the one, like you mentioned. So I see him coming with a lot of jank. And then also for me, I would say he's not going to be too terribly hard to kill if you can get to him. That's going to be the issue, is getting to him or having like a long range attack to take him out. So I think rocket stock almost also goes up just because of that range 5, and maybe even Winter Soldier because the range 5. I think those long range guys are going to be prime for taking out Toad because he's not going to be able to avoid them as much.
Sure. As far as like how does Toad impact the game, I would only really play him in Brotherhood. I could see an argument for Criminal Syndicate, but I really haven't forced it or found that he's in my list. I think Okoye is by far like above and beyond, and I still really like Widow as a two threat.
It's interesting you like him in Criminal Syndicate, because I see that as dyssynergy. Everybody in Criminal Syndicate can hand off an extract, so they're all mini Toads, or like the other side of the coin from Toad, but Toad loses a bit of his uniqueness in Criminal Syndicate for me, because anyone can give anyone an extract. You don't have to just be Toad to be able to get that extract.
So I've had a few games now playing Criminal Syndicate, and I've, for example, collected like a meteor, and I've had situations where I had spider infected, sure, where I grabbed the middle spider infected, and I really wish I could get it off of me. The problem with Criminal Syndicate is most of them struggle with power, so having Toad not grab anything and then turn to just pull it away, that could speed things up for you. It's just like, I don't know. I've been doing kind of, like, I've done everything with Criminal. I did sort of like the MODOK, like five big power characters, and I've done the like sort of swarm list. And definitely with the swarm list, I found myself so starved for power all the time. The Inert of Pain is sort of a catch 22, because like when you're spamming it, you're also not getting power because you're not getting hit. So sometimes I found myself actually. Yeah, I found myself sometimes struggling to decide on if I should use Inert of Pain, because I'm like, man, it's really cool that I'm not taking a hit this turn, but it sucks that I'm leaving myself drained of power. And then, you know, maybe I'm looking to do like a big move that costs like 3 power, and it feels just ridiculous that I might have no power for that entire turn. I don't know. Toad does sort of kind of do the thing, like you said, but he can sort of do the power transfer. And then most likely he's grabbing power, or he's grabbing an objective off an actual syndicate member, mm-hmm. which would leave the power on the syndicate member, which is important for cards like the Shadow Organization and All According to Plan. I don't know. Anyway, so as far as Brotherhood, I think he's just stapled because Magneto's so expensive, and
yeah.
they just sort of need like a lackey. He reminds me a lot of like Wong and Defenders. Like, it just sort of makes sense that Wong plays in Defenders to sort of counterbalance Strange. And in the same way, Toad feels very thematic in every way in Brotherhood. He just kind of is busy doing objective while Magneto's killing everyone.
Yeah. I would add, if you're saying Brotherhood, I think if we're going to go affiliations real quick, I would add, I think he's really interesting in Web Warriors.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. I would give it a try and tell me what you think. I won't go into detail about it, but I strongly recommend it.
One fun thing he can do that not many people can do is he can interact with two different origin bombs on the Meteors Crisis with only one move in between. Mm-hmm. Now, to do that, normally you need a medium move and a 65 mil base, even a 50 mil base, is you're going to be just a fraction out. If you're within one of the left Meteor, then to get to the center one, one move is not enough. One medium move with a 50 mil base is not enough. You need either a long move or you need to have a bigger base and a medium move. So he's a medium mover who can, because he can interact with the origin bombs within range two. It's not just extracts, those it secures that need you to interact. He works with those as well. That means that he can, you know, you can get more maneuverability out of him, and he can interact with multiple of them if he's got the power to do it. Now he's energy defense three, which is nice, because if he was only energy defense two, that would be an awful plan. But energy defense three is pretty decent.
Yeah. So moving on, Jacob, what do you have for our Xavier Protocol segment today?
So this is going to sort of expand out. This is something that's we've been knocking around between us a bit recently. I wanted to talk about how I've been using Hulk with Hired Muscle, because I've been having a lot of fun with Hulk. If you haven't already seen my articles on the Powerful Pentagrams play, I suggest going and have a read. There's stuff about teleporting MODOK up, and that's really, really good. But I've been having a lot of fun playing Hulk, and I think he's competitively viable in this particular role. One thing I want to do with him is I want him to go and grab a whole load of cubes so that he teleports up, grabs a cube that's in front of my opponent, then walks to the middle, grabs one in the middle, and then walks back, and he can then walk back onto, say, my furthest back D-shape secure, so that he can do quite a lot of stuff in that round one and influence the victory points a lot. He's great on cubes for doing that, because then you've got a whole load of cubes on Hulk, who's hard to take down, and it's giving him extra power and extra damage, which gives him more dice. So it's a win-win-win for Hulk on cubes. But another place I've been finding him pretty useful is in Spider Infected, because you can do a similar thing. You can jump through a portal for one power. You can grab a Spider Infected that's in front of your opponent. Then you can move to the middle and then move again. So you're on sort of the opposite side of the board, somewhere in the middle of the map, in range of three different uninteracted with Spider Infected. And that is a great time to use that last power he's got to Hired Muscle. So you can move all of them too. And that's going to really shift the Spider Infected. One in the middle, you can now go and get with just a medium or a long mover. You don't need to move twice to go and get that middle one, or be Angela. The one that's on the opposite side from the one you grabbed off your opponent, that's been moved two further away. They're probably going to have to use two moves to get to it. And the one that you've moved from near you is going to be much easier for you to pick up. And so it's much less positioning orientated. You're not being pulled out of position if you don't want to go over that way. So it's just the third crisis I'm running in that roster at the minute on extract is Spider Infected. And it's just a fun use of that card to really shift the game around on that beginning of turn one if you're running Hulk through a portal.
And so you're allowing counterplay with the opponent having the choice of board side. They might be able to figure out the best way to block it. I can imagine for someone like me who hasn't done the combo at all, and only I've seen you do it a few times. Is there like any like super easy terrain feature I should like keep an eye out for that would like disrupting, for example, character placement or like a spot that's sort of annoying?
If you've got like a big piece, like a size 4 or a size 5 piece of terrain, and you can't place within one of it and not be off the edge, if you understand what I mean. So you put the, if you put a range 1 and there's not enough space for Hulk to fit his base on, but the range 1 doesn't extend out over the terrain feature. Can you picture what that looks like?
Yeah.
So that if Hulk has to jump through a portal but then can't place himself in a position where he can just get it because of the way the terrain is, then that can stop him going down that side. But the thing is, you'll choose the terrain and then I get to choose which side my Hulk is going to go down. So there's, you know, you can force me into one side, but it's very difficult to have that happening on both sides. But what you can do then is you can go, great, well, I know Hulk can't get that one, so it's going to be coming this way, and then that can help you dictate your deployment.
I mean, it is cool to hear Hulk in conversation. I pay attention a lot to, like, Discord conversations and people constantly talking down Hulk and how he's useless. And with Magneto coming out, I feel like it sort of drew attention to Hulk and, like, oh, look how cool Magneto is and look how much worse Hulk is. But, you know, having played against your Hulk, I've definitely seen him be obnoxious. And I'm not sure how much of that is because I think maybe the portals are slightly overpowered and how much it's Hulk, but you know, Hulk definitely enjoys it. It seems to kind of work for him.
He's got a really good kit for that, in that he starts with 3 power innately, so he doesn't need any help getting the power he wants to do all the stuff he wants to do. He's got a 65mm base, so he's actually, you know, a 65mm base off that portal is there's a huge range that he can cover. And then with the Gamma Leap as well, means that he can run away really fast. So that if you've got 3 cubes on him, say, he can just run away and go, well, I've got 20 health and I'm over here. You're going to get 1 attack at me at most with each character. You're going to waste a whole load of activations trying to deal with me, and I'm not going to come and smash you in the face. If you send a melee character after me, maybe I'll beat them down if there's no one else around. If you just sent Killmonger after him, for example, and he doesn't get that usurp, then Hulk smashes Killmonger and then either runs or Gamma Leaps away, and Killmonger is sad.
So something Spalucci you were saying was about like the card is making Hulk good, but I think that's like something that's very paramount, like with this game in itself, is like finding synergies like this within this game that just like take a character over the edge just a little bit. But it's only like, I guess, like it's really corner case, especially with this one with Hulk, because it's really amplifying like his mobility. So I just think it's interesting, like, point out saying that, like, these little synergies in the game that get found out through people trying things out and all that. And, like, Jacob, you've been testing what pentagrams for what, over a month now?
3 weeks or something, yeah.
Yeah, so it's, well, like, I just think it's interesting to point out.
Let me say this, though. So, like, as of now, the community and whatever, we know about the kind of Hulk portal, which I think is fine, actually. I actually enjoyed playing against Jacob using that strategy. I felt like it's kind of cool. And then you've got this sort of Toad craziness that potentially will never end. Like, as long as Toad exists and new characters keep coming out, you just never know when something new will come around and make it even more silly. But Toad stealing herbs is a little nerve-wracking. And then you have this idea that is going around where you use the portal to shoot MODOK around and kill people in their deployment zone, which I know MODOK already has a lot of hate, so he doesn't need more things on his hate list. But I do think if there is any reason for the developers to get concerned, it would be MODOK more than the other two. Not to say that the other two aren't valid, and that's where it gets weird for me, because if it was just Hulk and there wasn't those other two things, I actually would be probably fine with it, because it's like, well, yeah, Hulk's a defender himself, and he's using a card that only defenders can use, so like, that seems kind of fine, right? It's the other stuff, right? And who knows what will come around the corner that might be even more ridiculous.
Well, I think something that comes around the corner is something we're going to be talking about today.
Okay.
So yeah, so bringing up today, we're going to be talking about Hired Muscle for a little bit. And I think Sploosh really wants to head this one up.
Cool. Sure. I want to give a nod to Turn Zero, Sooner and Todd. Both of them sort of brought this to my attention. And I know now that it's getting around this Hired Muscle strategy and what it can do for you. I know you played against it recently, right? And
I mean, it didn't get used to the best of its ability just because of the amount of characters he had, but the potential, I was able to see the potential with what he did, and it was, I think the potential is crazy.
Just for the benefit of the listeners, do you want to go into what you think the potential was and what the play was that you were particularly worried about?
So it was, we're playing Spider Infected, and Valkyrie moves up in between three of the extracts and pops Hired Muscle for one power, and then moves all three tokens towards his deployment line. And then Valkyrie scoops up the farthest one away, and then that leaves two more spiders to be picked up easily by the opponent, and either... I have the choice of, well, now I can either try and nuke Valkyrie because she's overextended, or I can try and run up there and overextend myself and pick up some spiders to get the victory points. So it really brings it brings a lot of questions for you to answer as the person facing against that Hired Muscle play.
Yeah, so Valkyrie would need to be within range three of the three objectives, and those three would be the center one, which is usually the hotly contested one, and then within range three of the one of the infected on the opponent's side. And then Valkyrie can choose to go either left or right. So if it's looking a little light on one end, you could go that way. I know when Sooner was looking at this strategy, he was loving it because he usually plays like six or seven characters. Mm-hmm. So he felt like he could kind of keep Valkyrie secret until the opponent had already placed all their characters.
Yeah.
So you can't, it's harder to counterplay.
You could go on either side. Yeah.
So yeah. I think that also plays into where the potential of this play is playing heavy one side to actually be able to scoop up all those objectives that you're using this card for.
Yeah. So one tip I'll give as well, and people can, you know, we always encourage people to try this stuff out on their own, but if you're range three of all the objectives at extreme distance, you won't actually be able to grab it because that's not the distance required, because you need it to go. So what the card does is it has to be range three, and then you move the token on the board range two in any direction. It doesn't have to be towards you. It could be, you know, down, away, whatever. But you, in this situation, you'd want to move one towards you, and then it would, you know, get placed. And then from range one of that token, you'd try to pick it up. The problem is that you actually won't make it at an extreme range three. However, if you use the range two measurement tool, it's pretty accurate to what you need. So it's a little trick. And so what you can do is use range three and the medium movement tool at the same time to try to get it right.
Yeah, I think you said the range two movement tool.
Yeah, I think I did. I didn't mean that. Yeah. I mean to say the medium move. So yeah. You have your range three for, you know, obviously using Hired Muscle correctly, and then you hold your medium tool to get the range right. So what you'd probably want to do is with a character like Valkyrie, you'd have to double move. So you'd probably want to move like once and then start doing like measurements to kind of figure out roughly where you need to be. And you're really only worrying mostly about the token you're trying to steal. And then the other two, you just got to be within the three. But it's really cool because what you can do is not only steal their, like in this situation, the spider infected, but you can take the one that's closest to you and put it like practically in your deployment zone. And then you can take the one that's in the center and bring it closer to your side as well. So if you don't grab the center, and someone has like a medium moving character on their side of the board exactly opposite that infected, they actually cannot get it. It has to be a faster character. So that's pretty crazy, right? So you can basically make it impossible for your opponent to get the middle without doing something very aggressive. And if they do aggressively try to get it, like let's say they got Black Panther, which is an obvious like long mover who grabs middle, now they're like much closer to your whole rest of your team. So Valkyrie is the I think in my opinion the poster child for this strategy, because she starts with two power. The card itself requires one power, and then obviously interacting requires another power. Valkyrie's basically in like 90% of lists in this game, and she's just easy to swing into basically any point value. So it's kind of like online all the time. So for example, you could play Spider Infected, but be at like 15 threat. The crazy part of this, right, is grabbing your opponent's side infected isn't really necessary at all. I mean, there's five tokens, so if you grab three of them, you're winning. And grabbing their side is kind of like a go for four strategy, which is like really winning, right? That's kind of win more. And it is putting your Valkyrie slightly in a dangerous position. However, what's really cool about this is you're sort of challenging your opponent to like kill Valkyrie on turn one, where she's relatively safe and still behind sort of the midpoint, like the medium halfway point of the board. So she's not like super exposed. She's carrying an objective. And if they spend a lot of energy attacking her, they might get their own token back, but you still got the middle in your home point. So you're still winning anyway. So it's kind of like, you know, catch 22, where you're sort of losing no matter what. You may hope to have some strategy to take out Valkyrie, but rarely do people have that kind of offensive output and distance on turn one. So any thoughts to that, guys?
Yeah, well, a couple of alternatives to Valkyrie. These all cost more, so one of the big advantages of Valkyrie is she is cheap. But that is Hela. Hela has better defensive stats. She's got fours across the board instead of threes across the board. So I think, and she's got a bigger base, which means she can run away further later. So I think Hela's a decent one to be considering if she's in your roster anyway. I think you can run this very well with her. Another one who's really good is Loki. Again, another Asgardian, so he's got that two power innate. But if they manage to take a second swing at him, the first swing, if it's done enough damage, might have given him enough power to trickster away. And if it hasn't given him enough power to trickster away, then he hasn't taken very much damage. So it's kind of a win-win for you. So I like either of those characters doing this play as well.
That's fair. I would like to avoid using R&D. I think R&D is a very good card in this game. But, you know, you're then using two out of five tactics cards, which is a significant percentage. And I do think that Hired Muscle can be sort of that eighth sort of sideboard tactics card in a list. And it's not very intrusive to what you're doing generally for no matter what affiliation you choose. But once you start forcing R&D and Hired Muscle, and that gets more intrusive. And that can be really frustrating if you're doing dual affiliations, things like that.
Well, that also brings up like how often this card can be used. Let's talk about the scenarios that can actually be affected by this card. So we got Spider Infected, Panic Grips, the Evacuees one. I'm blanking right now.
The Fisk
one. Yeah, the Fisk one. And what's the last one?
The Skrulls.
Skrulls. So you have four scenarios that you're able to use this with, and those three extracts and one secure. You want to talk about like how you could see this potentially offsetting those specific extracts and secure?
Well, I think a general principle of mine is I like to try and take tactics cards that are going to get me at least one victory point. Because then I think if I've got five tactics cards, if I play them all, then I'm going to get five victory points. And then I only need to get another 11 and I win. So I like to look at a card and go, how do I get this card to get me a victory point? And for things like field dressing, you know, it's really obvious. You get a character back up and they score at a secure. For things like patch up or med pack, then again, it's about I'm going to not go down, so I'm going to score this victory point. For this, I think, again, it's really clear, the sort of the line that you go to getting at least one victory point, and on the Mayor Fisk, potentially two victory points. So I think it's like doubly valuable on those. Although if you're grabbing three spiders, then arguably you're grabbing probably one to two that you wouldn't have got otherwise. So two victory points off that card is really, really good. One of the things with these cards is there's an opportunity cost having cards in those lists. You're not taking other cards. There's not space for other cool cards. But so long as it's pulling its weight, as long as it's getting you the victory points you need to win the game, then it's doing its job. You don't need to worry about those other cards. I mean, yes, they'd be nice to have, but getting victory points is how you win.
Yeah. To backpedal on Spider Infected, even though I do think it's really cool to grab their objective and put them in that trap I was mentioning, I'm very much a conservative player, and I'd rather just, if I'm scared my opponent can kill my middle grabbing character, I would be perfectly happy to just move my character up and just pull the center one towards me and then pick it up closer to me. Just because not only am I, like your opponent can't grab it, like I said earlier, where you, if you do it like a double medium with a, you know, medium moving character or a small base, how much more powerful is it that you're not only going close to it, but you're like medium tool away from the middle? So you're pretty much like, just looking at that on a board, you're basically standing at your sort of quote unquote home spiders, safely holding an objective. So you have three characters holding three VPs safely on your side of the board. That makes me feel nice and safe, and I'm ahead, right? So you're forcing your opponent to spend actions trying to come to you, and you don't have to go to them.
Not only that, but that has play later into the game. You only really, if you're ahead on the extracts, you only need to have parity on the secures. So a lot of secures have got four around. Think of a D shape or think of the B shape infinity formula. You only need to pick two of them, which you can choose which two you like and go, right, well, I'm going to guard these. I'm going to fight over these. These are the ones I'm going to try and score. And your opponent has got to leave two characters back on the other two. And suddenly you've got three of their characters against five of yours, for example.
That's a very solid point. Yeah. So unless they leave their VPs, but then they're now in that situation, you could even more aggressively like run away and just maintain that sort of parity. Yeah. So yeah, that's a great point. So having this one powered card, hired muscle, can create the situation where you're happily in like a 5v3, you know, yeah. And I'll take that any day of the week. That doesn't stop you from being able to kill characters they're bringing, maybe holding their spiders or, you know, one of the characters they have with a spider. So yeah, I love that. And that's kind of the whole point, right? And like you said, if this card read differently and just said, spend one power, get two VP, like who the hell wouldn't put that card in their eight?
Yeah.
Everyone would just be like, it would be the biggest auto include ever. There are some people who, sort of feel very strongly that this card could become a restricted list card. And, you know, I hate to get ahead of myself and that might just be ridiculous, but you never know. Like this go forward, like 2-3 months, I could actually see it possible that every single person plays this card. And we should go back to, let's give it another example. So I think Mayor Fisk is probably the second best choice for this. I mean, Skrulls has its value. I will just throw out there that with Skrulls, you could actually take a medium-based character like Corvus Glaive, who has an ability with Reality Gem to get Skrulls anyway. And with R&D, you can actually pull two Skrulls towards him and then interact with them both in the same turn. So that's kind of nuts. Not only that, but those Skrulls will be permanently positioned next to him. So it's not like he has to move the next turn. He could just hang out there, spending his two power every turn, rolling his lottery, you know, pulling on the slot machine.
And you don't you don't have to use R&D. You roll the first one. And if you pick up the scroll, you don't spend R&D.
This sounds like something you did math on before, but if somebody with a reality gem is getting two rolls, well, it's just like four dice per turn on a scroll. That's really good, right?
Yeah. Bear with me, caller.
If you want to just think about that for a minute, I can move on.
But 68% chance to pick it up.
Per or like total with both rolls?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's both all included?
Yeah, that's two rolls with a reality gem, 68%.
Yeah, that's pretty solid. And it's better than anyone else is going to get.
A lot better,
So, and not only that, but again, it's real estate. Like you're basically saying, these are like my slot machines. Go play with your own slot machines. Because, you know, Corvus Glaive is standing over there.
You know, if they do come to you, then they're running characters towards a reality Corvus. That's good for you.
Right?
That's definitely like what you want.
Yeah. Oh man, that's not pleasant when you get too close to Corvus. Anyway, so I'm not a fan of Skrulls. If anyone's listened to our earlier podcast, I'm not a fan. But I am a fan of Mayor Fisk vows to find missing witnesses. And that's a card that's really interesting because there's only two cures and they're both worth two VPs. So there can be a situation where, basically everyone piles up on their own little witness and maybe owns that. And they're sort of even, right? So you both are getting two VPs per turn plus extracts. But what you can do with Hired Muscle is be really cheeky and let the opponent put, let's say, realistically, probably two characters, but maybe not even, maybe one, and then their team near that character. But you could hold till the end one of your characters and just move up within the sort of medium template, like I said earlier, and, plop Hired Muscle down. And you can then pull the Fisk witness towards your deployment zone and away from their character that is, quote unquote, securing it. And you could steal two VPs. And they could even be in a situation, if they don't see this coming in the timing, of literally being unable to reach the token. Because like we discussed, that token is now farther back than some characters are even capable of reaching. You know, and maybe the character they already placed is kind of blocking. So maybe they have trouble getting to it. And so if you steal those two VPs, go ahead.
Yeah, or you've got some central terrain, so your long mover has to climb and therefore can't reach it.
Yeah, and then if you score those two VP, and theoretically the whole rest of your team is scoring the other one, that's four VP on turn one, right? So, okay, sure, you might say, oh, well, then the character that stole those two VP might get murdered. Well, yes, that's possible, right? However, if nothing else changes in that game, you win the game. You're up two VP, and the same thing that... I like what Jacob said about the opponent has to leave a character behind. Now maybe it's like a 5v4, something like that. So it can change the whole game based on just this one little card you played for one power. I think that's amazing. Any thoughts there? Any follow-up or other cards? I don't like it with the panic.
Panic's always had issues with characters like Rocket Raccoon is a great example, because Rocket is good at attacking people, but if you're attacking someone who's got an evacuee on them, an evacuee, then if Rocket does kill them, they drop their evacuee and Rocket is not in a good position to pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
What this does is this gives someone who's going to be attacking from a bit further away, maybe a Captain Marvel is another good example, someone who tends to be a bit further back, it gives them an opportunity to then, if they're within about a range, within range four, then there's a chance of the positioning of it that they can get that evacuee an inch away, then an inch of evacuee, then a range two, then an inch of evacuee, then another range. That's almost range four.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're in range four, if they're sort of an inch within range four, then they can get that evacuee off that person and pick it up, despite being almost range four away.
So not only that, and this is exactly what I'm thinking with evacuees, is not only are you potentially getting the chance to pick it up, but let's say you don't have enough power to pick it up, it's getting that citizen out of the area for your opponent to just go right up and pick it up again if you can't pick it up. So let's say you only have one power to go, but you don't have the range to quite get the citizen to pick it up yourself. So then use the card to move it out of the danger zone for your opponent just to come up with somebody else and pick it up, or field dressing that person back up and pick it up with that person, and then cash it in with that power you just gave them for tasing them. So that's where I'm looking at this card with evacuees, is being able to move that citizen out of the danger zone.
Yeah, there's definitely a whole nother discussion of how to use this card in the middle of a game. Never, there's obviously at the beginning of the game, it has like the most sort of swing, but in the middle of games, it can also be very powerful. If for some reason you don't get to use it, or your opponent used it faster than you could use it, or something ridiculous like that, then, I've seen games and I've played in games where Your opponent like purposely puts the objectives in like wonky directions, forcing you to have to like decide between like an attack or like go get your objective again. You know, Hired Muscle sort of eliminates that because you can sort of vacuum them all in and put them in angles that works for you again, and then also maybe get the kill you're looking for. So it definitely has play in actual gameplay, you know, beyond the turn zero sort of tricks.
Mm-hmm.
One thing is just using it to counter it, which feels a little bit bad, but if someone's come up and moved away all of the evacuees or all of the citizens or something, then you can then send your hired muscle in to go and move them back to where they were.
Yeah. Yeah, and I do think even if you don't have Valkyrie, like I had a game, my last game where I played Criminal Syndicate, it was like this one threat value where I didn't feel comfortable playing Valkyrie. And I was like, oh, man, what am I going to do about this? But I was still, you can still play it on a character with one power if you're just going to go for, like, the middle one and just sort of drag it out of reach, if you think that's going to be possible. My game was, like, a Criminal Syndicate mirror, and all of us were, like, slow as molasses. So it would have worked out great if I had played it. I ended up not and just, like, double-moving Kingpin. But if my opponent moved it, the middle one, I never would have reached it with my Kingpin. So he would have basically hard countered my attempt to get the middle spider. So the card is really strong, is basically the bottom line.
So I guess to wrap this up on this though, like, would you recommend like this card being in your eight and always being used on a citizen scenario?
I think for Fisk, I'd probably always take it. Infected too, but Spider Infected, you kind of have to, it's definitely a conscious choice to play Spider Infected. There are certain teams that don't like Spider Infected, for sure. So,
yeah.
I think Spider Infected is going to see a lot more play, particularly when we get Angela.
Yeah.
Angela can only grab one of the spiders, or one of the Spider Infected. So she's a lot of her utility in those turn one opening gambit extract grabbing is reduced because she can only get one of them. So I like that there's already a crisis, which is not a hard counter, but a piece of tech against Angela when she comes.
Yeah, that's right. Like, so if I was going to play Angela, which I'm really looking forward to playing her, I've already played her a bunch in practice and in proxying, that kind of thing. But she's a really, really good character. And when you have Angela on the board, you are encouraged to play cubes and Spider Infected because she's just so good at snatching that middle objective. If you don't play Angela and you feel like you maybe never want to purchase her or ever use her ever, I feel like Hired Muscle is a solid kind of counter tactics card. Because if you pull the middle objective and grab it and have it more safely on your side, that should at least protect you a little bit from her. And at least and sort of turn the game around a little bit, because I think Angela's whole concept is to try to like get an edge early with her movement and grab middle objectives. It's just sort of what she does. And if you can kind of flip that coin and make the opponent uncomfortable, it could be really big for you. So I think this card should though be in everyone's eight personally, because it's just. It's kind of like what we all wanted mission objective to be, but like I think that card's definitely fallen out of favor, and I think Hired Muscle just sort of like the better mission objective.
That's fair.
Well, if it wasn't better because it's more specific and only works on currently four crises, then you just would never. It wouldn't compare well, so it has to be better because it's more narrow.
Right, it is narrow, and that's why it's sort of like the eighth card. And you do have to sacrifice a little to put it in, but usually after like six or seven cards, you kind of are getting a little more soft on what you need. I do building dual affiliation rosters, that eighth card can still be really important. I've definitely run into situations where you get like these really awesome team cards that you just feel like you can't drop. Like, for example, Rainbow Bridge is one of those cards where you're like, oh man, I really want this in my eight. And then you're looking at Hired Muscle and it's like, I don't know which one. Which one makes it? It gets hard. But there's other.
If I include Rainbow Bridge, do I have to drop Odin's Blessing? That feels really bad.
Yeah, no, you don't do that.
I just want to hit something real quick. Do you guys want to explain Rainbow Bridge real quick? So we've gotten a question in the past about us talking about Tactics cards from the Angela pack that weren't out yet.
Yeah, I can read it. Not
seen. So if you just want to read that real quick.
Sure. Rainbow Bridge comes out hopefully in January for the whole world. And it's very simple. It's Asgard only. Any number of allied Asgard characters may spend 3 power each. Characters that spend that 3 power get to place within a range 3 template. So it's like a super Asgard assemble, right?
Super Asgard assemble.
What is not Asgard assemble. Avengers assemble.
But it's range 3 instead of range 2.
And it's a place, so terrain doesn't cause trouble.
It's just like a short group gamma launch. Like, it's massive.
Yeah, it's only the Asgardians, but I think with Angela, Thor, and Valkyrie just all placing, it's going to be nuts.
Or even Hela, like Hela being able to move that.
Oh, yeah, Hela. It's true, for sure. I mean, Loki placing.
I mean, all of them.
Yeah, no matter the costing, or no, what is it? What is this thing called that makes the blanks?
I am a god.
I am a god, yeah. So, like, my biggest problem with Loki is he doesn't have a charge, and then you give him that teleport with a punch to the face of I am a god. That seems great.
He does have a charge. It's called sibling rivalry.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Okay. But anyway, and then, like for, or another one that comes to mind is Shadow Organization. Like, it's like, in my opinion, it's the second fiddle to like All According to Plan, but like you really want to play it, but it gets hard when you're running dual affiliation and trying to slot in those extra cards.
Well, especially when you look at Syndicate, and in my opinion, Syndicate needs to run dual affiliation.
Yeah, probably. I don't know, I ran single and it was pretty good, but I don't know if that list is actually top tier or not.
So we're going to go ahead and move on to a few tips and tricks to close this episode out. So one from me specifically is making rosters in advance. Like, I have a bunch of rosters that I've made in advance, but it almost seems like every time I go through and I'm playing like the Beta Splendens League for TTS, and every single game I play this week, I've literally thrown something together real quick without like second glancing at it when I have these tested rosters that I'm still testing on my fun games, my pickup games. But when I'm playing like this, like semi-casual, semi-competitive, to me, like they're kind of competitive because it's got the league title. I end up just throwing something together and not really knowing what I'm playing until it comes down to it. And I don't really have a plan for it as well as I normally do. And Splush was a witness to this the other day. I went and made a roster, and then when I got to go play it, I was like, oh, I forgot to put my 2 threat character in here. I can't do a list at this. And then when we counted up when I started the game, I was doing my roster originally. It was basically counting my threat value was absolutely terrible. I miscounted and I had a really solid 15, but for some reason I was counting it at 14 points. I was like, I really don't want to play a point down. And ended up really having a really bad list I was playing with, I would say. It wasn't great for the situation that I was playing, and it wasn't great at all. So I guess like the biggest tip that this comes down to is if you're going to be playing in even like a semi-casual event, like make your list, know what you're going to be playing at different threat values, and like no math, I guess. Like, I guess that's the easiest way to put it is know your math for your list, because it's... Man, it's a feels bad moment when you're like, oh, I could have totally played that list and be perfectly fine at 15. It was funny in the moment, but it was still kind of feels bad. Like, that list would have been really good at that game.
I gotta say, I'm so spoiled because I've been playing so much TTS lately, and their new program thing, like you can make a roster and it auto counts your teams for you. And I will try to, even like when I'm bored, just go in there and you can actually save all the threat value teams. Even if maybe you're not going to like hard stay with like a certain, let's say 15, at least I'll put like my favorite 15 in, and then I can kind of edit it later or in the moment to what maybe a different tactics card or something. But in real life, do you guys have any thoughts as to like how you might remember maybe your threat teams or something? Or do you think that's just practice?
Well, there are a bunch of apps out there. I know GD Nerd's app, actually you can construct your list to view it at certain threat values. Because I've played with that quite a few times. As well as a good old fashioned pen and paper works really well.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people use like a little notebook, a little pocket notebook. And you can have a page for like your 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. You can also have a page for important things to remember on deployment for each of those as well. So that as well as that team, like, okay, make sure that this character is this distance away from this character because I figured out for the play that I'm doing, I need that to be the case. Mm-hmm. Or make sure that I put this character on the same side as this character because I have a tendency to put them over there and then I realize they're in the wrong place and they need to be near this character for this other reason I've got. So you can make yourself little notes on deployment as well, which can be easy to forget.
Well, that also kind of goes back to our first tips and tricks episode where I had mentioned if you go to a tournament, bring a notebook so you can make those little notes like that. Like at first, it kind of seems tedious and like you don't want to put that effort in. But it's like if you're going to a tournament and you want to win, it's kind of like those little steps you got to like that extra effort you got to take to be one of those top tier players, in my opinion.
Yeah, you often get realizations in the middle of a game and you're like, I did that badly at the beginning of the game. I should do it differently in the future. And just, having the opportunity to write them down so you've got it recorded. Good mm-hmm. idea.
It's, there are a lot of new characters come out in this game every day. And it feels like that anyway. And I know just from playing other games, I'm the kind of person that just loves playing Flavor of the Month. So it's hard, no matter how experienced you are, it's hard to like have muscle memory for something that's only existed for possibly like a week or two, maybe a month. So even like experienced players probably have at least some notes or thoughts, setting up a team, and it can make you just go quickly in the beginning of setup where you quickly glance and go, okay, this even if you don't stick to it, you're like, well, this is the 17. I at least on paper, this is what I thought was a good idea, and then maybe put like a moment of thought into like, well, will I change anything? Maybe this 3-threat instead of this 3-threat, that kind of stuff, but. I don't know. I've done that in many other games too, where, little tricks and like setup ideas and in turn zero kind of stuff. Like Jacob is right about even just like putting a character with another character. Like, and that's actually, something people do where they, I was even yesterday, I was just trying to build like some X-Men teams and I was like, okay, hypothetically, if I'm playing a game, like who goes with who here? Like, let's head sim this a little. Like, who's going to go with Wolverine? If I send Wolverine with like Nebula and both of them are dazed or whatever, no one's picking up any objectives. maybe I shouldn't do that. Little things like that can go a long way.
Yeah. I've been playing a lot of Hulk recently and some of those teams have Okoye in, and having Okoye on the same side of the table as Hulk is kind of big.
So I think this kind of also ties into something else I want to mention that I've been falling victim to, I guess I could say. And that is, unless you're like testing something, sure. But when you're making lists, don't try to force a character into a list. Because I have been trying to fit Taskmaster into every single list, which isn't hard to do. Because I think he's amazing. but it's also limiting myself on what I'm able to do. Because he's taking up a roster slot. I think Taskmaster is amazing. But I'm also falling prey to let me have Taskmaster in every single list, and then every single game I play has had Taskmaster since he's came out. And he doesn't actually always fit in every single game, and I've kind of fallen into that. I want to play him every single game, which again isn't a terrible thing, but it can be if you're looking at a very situational character.
Yeah, like someone throwing range threes out there.
Yeah,
which actually reminds me, Jake was mentioning, I think it was, he was saying Rocket earlier with the muscle thing. I actually think people who love hired muscle are the guys with the rapid fire range 3 attack, because if you do, like I said, the medium range template thing, you could knowingly move up and shoot someone with rapid fire and then steal the objective with hired muscle. But sorry, it just came to me. I can see the Taskmaster thing. I've been doing sort of similar. And Taskmaster does have weaknesses. Like anyone shooting outside of range 3 at him, he can't do his counterattack thing and he doesn't get his martial arts. So. Anyway, you want to go to the last subject?
Yeah, so go ahead and hit, I think you have a tip for us.
Yeah, this is something that came from unfortunate events in my games. Basically, I've had to remind myself, and I've said before, I'm still kind of new to this whole sort of miniatures gaming. And one thing I learned when I watched some really experienced miniature game players is that these games are collaborative experiences. And what that means is that it's not like there's other games that are very hidden information based. And an example that comes to mind is like Magic the Gathering, where it's more of like a you against them and you keep everything secret. And in miniature games, it's the opposite in some ways. Like everything's pretty much visible. There's not as much hidden information. And when you move a character, it's not like, it shouldn't be really you just moving a character. It should be you talking to your opponent while you're moving the character and making sure at all times that you both agree to what is happening. First of all, it creates a better environment between you and your opponent. But truly, like, things get bumped. People are constantly measuring ranges, and you're trying to save time. You don't want to take too long when you're doing things. Games shouldn't take, like, 2 hours or more. This should be happening relatively rapidly. In events or just for fun or whatever. I mean, whatever. For fun, you can take as long as you want and drink beers or whatever. But in anything even remotely outside of that realm, you want games to not take forever. And so by cooperating with your opponent and verbalizing everything you're doing, you're saving time. Because you don't want to, like, secretly check range 3 and then move into range 3 and then not show your opponent that you did it. And then say, okay, I attack you range 3. Because then your opponent's first instinct is like, well, are you in range 3? And then they're going to want to check to make sure. And then if they don't agree with you, at that point, you may have picked up all your stuff and now it can't be like reversed. So then you're now arguing with your opponent if you're in range 3 or not. Does it make sense?
Yes. So I kind of want to hit on that because I come from playing games for years. And this is something that I was taught at a very young age. So for me, it's second nature. And that's always, always, always stating your intent when you're either moving or you're using a range ruler for something. Like, my intent is to put like Venom on top of this car and be just outside of range 2, but within range 3 of you. Yeah, you're projecting a little bit, but like you're being open about what you want to do. So where when it comes to your next action with him, like, okay, well, Venom's going to attack, but I'm outside of range 2, so Taskmaster doesn't get to add blanks to his thing. Like, stuff like that, it smooths the game out, and it makes for a better play experience, because then it's like, well, maybe you don't actually fit on that car, because I want you to come closer to me, so you're within that range 2. So it's like, because, like, there are times where I'll be playing the game, and I'll give it to somebody. Like, yeah, you might have a little bit of overlap, but I'm just like, yeah, man, it's cool. Like, you fit on top of the car. I'm cool with it. And stuff like that. Like, stating intent just makes for a smoother game.
So a couple of reasons that's good as well is if you and your opponent say we are in range 4 or something of these two characters, right? If one of those characters later gets bumped, you're never going to argue about that range anymore. You shouldn't anyway, because you already agreed to it earlier. And maybe the current board state doesn't actually match what you agreed to earlier, but that's fine. You cannot be so literal. And when your opponent asks you, or you ask your opponent, is this in range, don't rush them and give them a chance to say no or yes. Because I know, like, Jacob and we had a game where I had said, like, oh, this terrain is range 3 and this terrain here is range 3. And then, like, this character is, like, range 2. And at one point you were like, oh, no, actually, that one's not range 3, I don't think. And then we kind of, like, fixed it, you know, because, you know, the intent is this is what we're doing. And then you both agree and then you move on, right? And I think that's a very healthy way to play this game. Sort of a
TTS, yeah, where it's not as easy as real life. So you need to kind of be a little bit generous to your opponent in terms of positioning. And so if you're trying to say, well, I want to be in this position, but sometimes it's very hard to get it exactly where you want it, whereas in real life, it would be incredibly simple. So particularly if you're playing online, just bear that in mind.
I actually find TTS for me relaxing because the measurements are so strict and the rulers are strict. I hate that feeling in a real game where, on purpose or not, my opponent feels like they're, like, I always get this impression they're, like, nudging things to their advantage, you know, in those micro movements. And it's like, oh, like, you definitely want to try to avoid those odd feelings of like, did my opponent, like, bump the objective, or, like, was it always there? Is Is he really measuring where his character was like 5 seconds ago, or did he like kind of move it by accident or whatever? And then like, is he now in range when he really wasn't? But you do want to try to be a little generous and understand that there's just like, unfortunately, room for error. Was it margin of error in tabletop games? And try not to argue over like pixels. I don't know. Do you guys want to follow up with that? I do kind of have a second thought on all of this, but I don't know if I don't want to. If you guys have any further thoughts on this particular subject.
I think you've covered it well. Just narrate your turns. It's also a good habit to get into because it's kind of crystallizing your own thought process, and that helps embed good good habits as well.
Yeah, no, the follow-up this, and this is one that might... This has been a struggle for me, is double-check everything your opponent does. So you're cooperating with movement. I think we can all understand that. But you need to also collaborate on, you know, remembering tokens like shock or, you know, making sure somebody added a power when they should have or spent a power when they said they were going to. Making sure that, you know, hammers, they have to spend an extra power for tactics, or making sure that when they're holding like an herb or something, they only move once instead of twice, or get their extra physical die. There's so many objectives with like these little caveats and like extra details that it's very easy for just one person to miss something. And it can feel sort of disingenuous, but truly people just forget things. I know when I watch people on stream play this game, one of the biggest ones is bleed. It's just like, sometimes as a spectator, it's so easy because you're not actually thinking about, you know, other things. So you're just staring, and all of a sudden you see someone miss the bleed trigger, and you're like, and it starts driving me crazy. I'm like, oh my God, I hope he remembers that bleed, you know, and, or someone will bleed and then accidentally give themselves a power or something. And not only does it drive me nuts when like the opponent or whatever does it, or a person in the stream, but then like the other guy doesn't even check or notice. So then it feels like the game state's all messed up. And like, so I unfortunately had basically a game loss because I just didn't check something my opponent was doing. And it afterwards, I think a lot of people's first impression would be to get mad at the opponent. I generally didn't. I actually got furious at myself because I was like, man, what is wrong with me? I should just be checking these. And I know when I am doing something wrong. I think Dizzard, one time we played and I double moved by accident, and you're like, hey man, you can only do a single move. And I was like, ah, oh, crap. Mm-hmm. So we ended up, you were a good gentleman about it. You kind of let me just backtrack both moves and kind of start over, which was a really nice thing to do and something you probably didn't have to do. I welcome that. I don't know about you guys. If someone calls me on like an oops, you know, I don't get all, you know, upset, or I, if anything, again, I get mad at myself. Like, oh, how did I should have been more careful. I should have known. And that's sort of the juggling act too, of like trying to go fast so you don't take too long, but then also being careful not to miss things. But anyway, to conclude it all is basically the lesson I learned was by sort of just trusting my opponent, which I felt at the time was like the sort of gentlemanly thing to do. I literally caused myself to lose a game for an accidental mistake. And looking back on it, I realized I'm just was being stupid. Like it is my job to double check what my opponent is doing, not out of a feeling of being cheated or anything. It's not the attitude. The attitude is that there's a lot going on in these games, and you're both responsible for the board state. So if anything goes wrong, like someone forgetting a bleed, it's actually both players' fault.
Well, so not only that, just to kind of like add to it is like, especially in some of these characters and a lot of these turns, there is a lot going on. Like I have found myself quite a few times actually to where I'll do like a movement with somebody, and then I'll play a tactic card, and then I'll do an attack, and then like by the time this has gone by, like almost 5 minutes have gone by, it's because like the string of abilities and things that are going on and moving pieces, and then next thing I know I'm trying to move again, and then my opponent will be like, well, didn't you move to get to where you are right now before you attack? That's two actions. It's like, oh, you are completely right. And like, it just kind of comes down to just like, I guess, not getting upset about that when someone calls you out on it, because everybody makes mistakes. I think that's like one of the biggest things to take into consideration with this is nobody's perfect with this game, and everybody makes mistakes.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. Another thing I've had to teach myself is when I use like MODOK power for rerolls, I'll tell my opponent MODOK reroll two, and then I'll start rolling my two dice, and then, you know, see what happens, blah, blah, blah. And then I'll go back to my power and go, oh no, did I take off the two from the rerolls? So what I've forced myself to do is I always take the power off as soon as I say I'm doing it.
Yeah.
And it sounds so obvious, but like you can feel like a shortcut is good, and then it ends up being worse because now you're spending time going, okay, how much power did I have in the beginning of my activation? How much power did I spend on this? And you're starting to do like this whole remember what happened, you know, like 2 minutes ago. And that's slowing the whole game down, where if you had just taken a quick second to, you know, remove two power, that whole thing would have never happened. So just point is, spend your power the minute you are using it and save a lot of frustration with, you know, oops, sorry, man, I have too much power, or I forgot, or, and then you use your power that you didn't actually have, and then now you have to backtrack that. It gets weird.
Yeah, I would say that's probably the best practice to do with that is I am spending two power from MODOK. At that moment, take that two power off, move it over. The only thing I would say, caution with that is, because I did it this weekend, actually, I was playing a Vibranium Heist event down in Nashville, and I was doing photogenic reflexes with Taskmaster, not realizing that he had gotten his flurry. I already spent the two power and forgot that I spent the two power and kind of shorted myself because I was missing two power that I was supposed to have to do two photogenic reflexes. So just be mindful of timings and as you say it, taking that power off. And then if something happens as you're like trying to do that, make sure you put that power back on before you actually do it. So like as you're doing something, take the power off.
Yeah. That's all. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts there.
Following up on that last one, if you're playing online, make sure Jarvis is turned on. There's a little thing that tracks your power and damage and stuff so you can see what you've added and when, and just a really useful thing to check that you're where you should be in terms of game state.
Yeah. I would say just add on to that, just a quick shout out to Llama and the rest of the mod team for TTS for putting stuff like that together. Well, that wraps it up for this episode of The Danger Room. We hope you enjoyed it and learned something to level up your next game. You can reach out to us on our Discord, Twitter, or Facebook. The links will be in the description. We have a questions channel on our Discord, so feel free to drop us some questions in there and we'll answer them on the show. Thank you for taking the time and listening to us. If you're liking what you hear, leave a rating or comment, or even both. We appreciate any feedback to help us grow and become a better group to bring you the best quality content that we can. See you next time in the Danger Room.
Simulation complete.